Except Livia was now dead. Because having produced the templates, she wasn't needed anymore? Or the stress of the situation had made her too unreliable? And what did her death mean for Angelique? Poor problem-solving Angelique, desperately leaving us breadcrumbs, doing everything in her power to lead us to them. Then late last night, climbing into a van to help dispose of her friend's body, knowing none of her plans had been good enough, knowing she would be next. Thank you, Charlie. I glance at my watch. 8 p.m., way too early to be cutting out of work, but I don't have a choice. There is no way I can stand here, slinging drinks, not with so much at stake. I need to move. I need to do. I hope Stoney will understand. I untie the apron from around my waist. Charlie stands up at the bar.
Where are you headed?
He asks. I don't know.
Maybe the BPD field office to have it out with Lotham.
Or... I'm going to head to the rec center.
This time of night?
It all started there, and all roads keep leading back there. I can't put my finger on it, but that's the place to be.
Then I'm coming with you.
I don't argue. A hulking bodyguard is not a bad idea at all. Which leaves me one last task. I bolt back to Stoney's office, where he's pecking away at his ancient computer.
Bye,
he says, without looking up. I have a lead.
Bye.
I'll be back. I'm so sorry. Stoney finally glances at me.
Go,
he says. So I do, Charlie in tow. We've barely stepped outside the bar when my phone rings. It's Emmanuel, and the boy sounds hysterical. Chapter 35. Lily, Emmanuel is gasping. She just called. I heard screaming. She was screaming, no, 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 then sorry, sorry, sorry. But not to me, like she was talking to someone else. I think she had the phone tucked away where they couldn't see it. But then there was this huge boom. I didn't understand. I started yelling her name. She came back, speaking right to me. She said, I love you. Then the phone went dead. What is happening, Frankie? What is happening? Did you try calling back? I couldn't. The number is blocked. What about the cell number you found on the receipt? Nothing. I don't think it's turned on. Okay, we're headed toward you right now. Give me 10 minutes. I'll be there. Where is my sister? I'm working on it. I swear to you. You're lying. You don't know anything. You're lying. Emmanuel, listen to me. Your sister needs you. The license number code. Think, where are you with the license code? All I got was another string of numbers. Maybe a code within a code? I'm still working on it. Give me what you got, right now. He starts rattling off numbers. I repeat each one out loud. Charlie reaches into his massive coat, pulls out a pen, and writes the string of numbers across the palm of his hand, as if we'd been working together for years. Stay where you are, I order Emmanuel. Keep your phone on. If she calls again, do everything you can to keep the connection, okay? Maybe the police can trace it. I'll call Detective Lotham right now. I hang up with Emmanuel. Dial Lotham. Charlie doesn't say a word, just keeps on trucking beside me as I strike a furious pace toward the Badeau's apartment. Lotham doesn't answer till the fourth ring.
Not now.
Emmanuel just called me. Lily phoned him 5 minutes ago, screaming for help. Call disconnected, numbers blocked. He can't call back.
Shit.
Charlie and I are headed there right now.
No, I'm sending uniforms. Go home. Right now, Frankie, I mean it.
Not to sound childish, but you are not the boss of me.
God damn it.
Deep breath. He's clearly struggling for control, but I could give a flying fuck. This is my case, and I'm not backing off.
Frankie, I'm outside the Somdi residence. He's dead.
I falter, miss a step, glancing up at Charlie. Who's dead?
J.J. Somdi, gunned down, probably in the last 30 minutes.
The website,
I whisper. What the fuck, Frankie?
That was the last project, the final piece of the puzzle.
They needed the girls to finish the virtual college so they could graduate from fake IDs to fake documents for real student visas. Now that everything is in place and online, they're cleaning up shop. Deke Allery is cleaning up shop.
Go home.
Angelique's family could be in danger as well,
which is why officers are on the way.
Good. We'll meet them there. I disconnect the call, turn to Charlie, who's clearly heard every word. How do you feel about running? I ask him.
Knees don't love it, but given the circumstances.
We both take off down the sidewalk. We hit the final block where Emmanuel and his aunt live, and I register two things at once: the sound of distant sirens and the wailing of a nearby woman.
They took him!
Gerline screams the second she sees me.
They took Emmanuel.
Who? Where? Some man. I came downstairs to fetch Emmanuel. This white van pulled up in the middle of the street and a man jumped out. He had a gun. He pointed it at Emmanuel and told him to get in before anyone got hurt. I tried to grab Emmanuel's arm. I tried to stop him, but then the man, he leapt up on the steps and smashed Emmanuel over the head with his gun. My boy. He collapsed, and blood, so much blood. I started screaming at him to stop, but the man just looked at me. Then he put Emmanuel on his shoulder and threw him into the van. As it drove away, her voice broke, dropped.
I heard a gunshot. I saw it, a flash through the side window. They shot Emmanuel, my baby. Oh my God, what have they done?
I grab Gerline's arm as she starts to collapse. Did the man say anything? I demand, doing my best to anchor both of us.
No.
What did he look like?
Tall, skinny. His hair was all these tiny braids tied back, and he was wearing gold chains.
Deke Allery, I exhale. Ma'am.
Charlie's turn.
The van. Which way did it go?
Gerline points down the block. I can hear the police sirens, finally drawing closer. Emmanuel's cell phone. Did he have it on him?
He dropped it when the man hit him.
Damn. Because the phone would have given us a way to track him, which no doubt Deke also knew. Mrs. Violette, can I enter your apartment? Emmanuel was working on decoding a cipher we believe Angelique may have left for us. I need his notes. Gerline appears too shocked to answer. I leave her with Charlie's comforting bulk while I pound upstairs and burst into the apartment. There, the open laptop on the kitchen table, surrounded by piles of paper. I don't bother to look. Laptop, loose papers. I grab it all, shoving it into a rough pile. I spot a dark blue backpack propped on the floor against the wall. Probably also Emmanuel's. I dump everything inside, slinging the pack over my shoulder. A squeal of tires outside, two patrol cars screeching to a halt. I hear Gerline wind up again, along with Charlie's soothing undertones. Then Officer O'Shaughnessy's unmistakable voice, demanding to know what's happened. I exit the apartment, pausing on the second floor landing. If I go downstairs right now, Officer O'Shaughnessy is going to demand my version of events as well. He may also recognize Emmanuel's backpack and force me to hand it over.
Time. I feel it. The drumbeat that's been chasing me since early this morning. Right now, right now, right now. Everything is happening right now. If I go downstairs, submit myself to police questioning like a good girl? There will be no right now. There will be talking and explaining, followed by outrage and heated exchanges. Then heaven help me if Lotham arrives and we have to start the conversation all over again. In the end, it's not much of a decision at all.
Angelique, I am here to find Angelique, to save a girl, to redeem a sin I can never change. And maybe to chase a bullet I dodged 10 years ago. I turn left,
down the end of the hall to the fire escape. Then I vanish into the dark. I hit the bottom of the fire escape. I drop onto a patch of dirt, exit the rickety chain-link fence behind the triple-decker, and pray I don't get shot by a paranoid neighbor. I've landed in a narrow alley running behind the row of townhouses. I need light and a secure space where I can quickly sort my way through Emmanuel's notes to find the decoded numbers he'd rattled off by phone. First question, do I head left or right? I strike out right, then promptly hear a noise behind me. I whirl instantly, hands up in a pugilistic stance. I only know what I learned during self-defense at the Y. I refuse to be an easy mark, though. Bad guys want me. They're gonna have to work for it. No forms materialize in the dark. Instead, I hear the sounds again. A low moan, a hissing sigh, the clatter of someone trying to walk but doing a poor job of it. I slip into the darkness rimming the edge of the alley and creep toward the sound. What I discover leaves me shocked beyond words. Deke Allery, leaning heavily against a lowered fire escape, arm gripping his side. I don't have to look closer to see he's been grievously wounded, his shirt covered in blood. So he was the one shot in the van. Not Emmanuel, but Deke. He goes to take a staggering step forward, only to collapse. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hang on. Smart or not, I spring to his side. His breathing is shallow. In the reflected light of a distant street lamp, I can see sweat dotting his brow. The sight threatens to send me spiraling to another time, another place, another man on the ground, bleeding out. Deke grabs my shoulder, gripping painfully. I wince, grateful for the distraction, as he tries to use me as a human crutch. Unfortunately, he's too big and I'm too little. Both of us go careening to the ground. He grunts painfully. I scramble to get my feet back beneath me, assume the offensive. Gun, I demand. Where's the gun?
Don't have.
Who the hell shot Emmanuel? Where's Angelique? Fired up on adrenaline, I lean over him and scream my questions into his face.
I'm sorry,
he whispers. His eyes are closed, his skin graying. Another time, another place. Me, rocking back and forth on my heels. No, 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 stay with me. Please, Paul, stay with me, stay with me, stay with me. I need you. Your family's dead. You know that, right? Your half-brother, your half-sister, both of them, murdered. He shakes his head, drawing another painful, rattling breath.
No one was supposed to get hurt.
What a bunch of horse shit. Where's Angelique? I try to step back, but he grabs my ankle. I glance around. There's no one in this alley. Just him and me. Just me and a dying man. Paul, on the ground, his head on my lap, while his hands grip his stomach, trying to keep his insides from leaking out.
Well, that didn't go as planned.
Me. Screaming, 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 screaming. Paul,
shh, it'll be okay. I love you.
Me, screaming some more.
I didn't want them hurt.
Deke is rasping out now.
No need. This is supposed to be upmarket stuff. Just wanted to see my family again. Mom wouldn't take my calls. Johnson hated me. Found Livia, little Livia. She said, hey, we started talking.
I close my eyes. You poor stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I think he's smiling. It's hard to tell as he coughs and blood sprays from his mouth. He's not going to make it. I know the signs too well. Deke Allery, my lead candidate for all things evil, is about to die. I take a seat beside him. I smooth back the fuzz on his forehead. He is both sweaty and cold to the touch. It won't be long now. We both know it. Paul,
promise me you won't blame yourself for this. Promise me you won't use it as a reason to drink. Come on, Frankie. Promise me. I liked Livia,
Deke murmurs now.
So fucking smart. Was I ever that smart?
A bloody smile.
She got all bent out of shape over fake licenses. Bad merchandise. I told her she should fix it. She could do better. I could get her the equipment. I could get her whatever she wanted.
You set her up to manufacture fake IDs.
Rough start. These new state licenses. Not as easy as they look.
I nod, stroking his damp cheek. His eyes are closed, his breathing rougher. Paul.
I'm glad you called tonight, Frankie.
Me, crying hysterically.
I'm happy you still trusted me that much. Livia brought in a friend after school, worked on it together. Got to a point, product wasn't half bad. I brought the fakes to my suppliers, went into business. But soon, not enough. These guys, real counterfeiting pros, wanted real IDs. Something bigger. Better.
Deke coughs wetly, more blood dribbling from the corners of his mouth. Paul.
I'm thirsty. So thirsty. Do you have any water, Frankie? Can you get me some water?
What happened, Deke? I stroke his cheek.
They demanded a meeting with my source. But Livia, too scared. Angelique showed up in her place. She had a new plan. Not real ID. Couldn't.
He breaks off, coughing again.
Be done. Visas. Student visas.
Angelique figured out, I provide for him, that forging a visa would be just as difficult as a real ID. However, she could create an entire fictional college that would issue the application documents needed for a real visa. Short nod. Why a college for student visas versus green cards?
Student visas, less scrutiny, and so many colleges. Easier place to start. Plus, Angelique's idea, she wanted for herself, her brother.
So this was the initial offer. Get these documents right and not only make huge sums of money now, but set the stage for larger money later. Except, they didn't let Angelique come home from that initial meeting, though, did they? This much Lotham and I had already figured out. Angelique's grand idea put more at stake. So Big Bad Associate guys decided to protect their investment by keeping her, which also provided leverage to force Livia to engage. Faint nod. Deke's breathing is ragged. I can hear the beginnings of a rattle. Paul.
Hold my hand, Frankie. Please, just hold my hand.
Me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I know. And I love you anyway. I've always loved you anyway.
But progress wasn't happening fast enough. I push now. So they grabbed Livia anyway, forced her and Angelique to work day and night.
Livia wasn't doing so good. The pressure. They got nervous, worried she'd tell. Took her, too. Stuck them both in an abandoned building. One leaves, the other suffers. Couple of guys stand and watch. I tried, when I could, give them some breathing room, let Angelique out, but she had to come back. She always came back.
For Livia, I supply.
She loves Livia.
So he knew then how much Angelique and Livia meant to each other. What happened? I asked, stroking his cheek. Not much longer now.
I thought I could keep Livia and Angel safe. I thought
you could control the situation?
Couldn't. Everything harder than it looked. Guys panicking, girls freaking out. Month into month. Took so long. Livia. Poor Livia. Then you came, rocking the boat, so I tried to scare you off. Stop questions.
You shot at me, outside JJ and Rosalind Somdi's house.
Thought better, if you gone.
But I didn't leave, I murmur, and it didn't get better.
Angelique thought, if they cooperated, everything'd be okay. She got college website, registry documents, done. Had our first trial.
And it worked, didn't it? I fill in for him. Heaven help you all. Angelique's master plan succeeded, meaning suddenly they didn't need any of you anymore. Not Livia, not Angelique, not even you.
I tried to warn Livia, wanted her to get out, but caught us. He killed her right in front of me. What happens if you try to run?
You got away. You came to Stoney's bar. I saw you outside my window.
Wanted to talk to you, but then saw the cop arrive. Didn't know who I could trust.
Where is Angelique, Deke? Tell me. I'll protect her for you. I'll save her, and I'll be sure she knows it was because of you. Deke's breathing is definitely ragged now. Suddenly, his body convulses. He winces, grabs his stomach, then heaves sideways just in time to vomit up blood.
Please, Paul, just hang in there. Help is coming. Paul, please, God, Paul!
House cleaning now, Deke whispers. No loose ends. I gave Angelique my phone, told her to warn her brother. They knew about her messages to him, but her call, not in time. They grabbed him, threw him in the van. I went for the gun. Enough is enough.
And there it is, the final death rattle I know all too well. Me, clutching Paul's hand, keening. Sirens in the background, still way too far away. They won't be able to save him. No one can save him. Paul, eyes fluttering open.
You are so beautiful. First time I saw you, I knew you were the one. So many I tried to fix, but you. You healed me. I love you, Amy, forever and always. I love you for loving me.
Me, keening. As her name goes on and on. Amy. The woman he truly loved. The woman who loved him. The woman I could never be. There are no sirens now, no final declarations of love. A long, shuddery sigh.
Livia,
he whispers. Then I watch the life expel out of Deke Allery. I feel his hand go limp in mine. I bend over long enough to close his eyelids. I brush a soft kiss over his forehead. I thank him for trying to save Emmanuel and Angelique. I bless him for having the fortitude to tell me what I need to know, where I must go next. When I finally rise to standing, I'm coated in blood and tears, and once more, that night, so long ago.
I love you, Amy.
I accept the pain as my due. Then I grab Emmanuel's backpack and I start to run. There's not much time anymore, but finally, I know exactly where to find Angelique, as well as her brother. I know how to get this one right. Chapter 36. I dial 911 as I race toward the wide boulevard, then track north. I rant about a gunshot victim in a back alley. I tell the confused dispatcher operator it's Deke Allery and he's already dead, and Officer O'Shaughnessy is in the vicinity, and please let him know. And P.S., please tell a guy named Charlie that I'm sorry. Then I hang up before the operator can ask me any more questions. Next, I call Lotham's cell. He answers instantly this time, already on high alert. Where are you? They have Angelique and Emmanuel. Deke tried to stop them. He's dead. I tell him where I'm going, then warn. Lights off, sirens quiet. If they know the police are there. Lotham doesn't require further explanation. I think of his broad face, his mangled ear. I think he's a good man, an excellent detective. And if anyone can get this done, I think, if I get shot next, he's the one I would like to hold my hand. He's not speaking. I hear his thoughts instead. His quiet desperation for me to go home, be safe. His relentless need to save Angelique, to protect me. But maybe I am growing on him, because he doesn't say the words out loud anymore. He doesn't tell me to do things we both know I won't do. I hang up the phone. I keep running toward where it all began 2 summers ago, where it will end tonight. The rec center and its kindly director, Frédéric Lagoudou. I come upon the van first. It is parked out front, the back door slung open, the inside empty. I don't dare use my pocket flashlight to examine it more closely. I sniff instead, catching the unmistakable scent of blood. From Deke, before they dumped him? Or am I already too late? I refuse to believe that Emmanuel is dead, if only because I can't bear the thought. All of my other cases, I've pursued my target from a distance, never having met the missing person in question. But Emmanuel? I've talked to him, comforted him. He's just a boy. He doesn't deserve this. I creep my way around the giant metal building. I don't see any trace of lights or detect any sounds of activity. But I know how immense the building is. Plenty of internal classrooms and smaller storage spaces that aren't noticeable from the outside. What was it Mr. Riddenscale said? The operation could be as simple as a single computer and printer. Wouldn't require much square footage at all. Did that mean Livia and Angelique had been there every time I'd visited? And Frédéric, holed up in his office bright and early each morning, hadn't been the diligent savior of at-risk teens I'd thought him to be? In hindsight, the description of the driver who'd dumped Livia's body, a tall, thin black man, fit Frédéric as well as Deke. I'd simply never connected those dots before. Combine that with Deke's comment that they had seen me talking to JJ. That conversation had taken place outside the rec center. Again, all roads leading back to this one enormous building where Livia and Angelique had first met. Where someone in Frederick's position would have plenty of opportunity to scope out their talent. He'd probably been recruiting local kids for various enterprises for years, well over a decade, if Deke knew him from his days before prison. So many things that now made sense, if only I'd paid attention sooner. Now, I try to remember the name of the shorter, muscular man who'd been in the building the first time I'd visited. Dutch? Something like that. According to Deke, there were multiple other players. Certainly Dutch would make for excellent hired muscle. Though there could be criminal partners I'd never met before. 1, 2, half a dozen? I still don't know what I don't know. Which doesn't stop me from creeping around to the rear entrance, slowly cracking open the heavy glass door. I pause. Listen intently. No alarm sound. No bodies materialize on the other side. I slide myself through, halting again to get my bearings. I can just make out a light down the long corridor near Frederick's office, which presents me with my first obstacle. Discovered in that corridor, I'll be a sitting duck, and these guys have real guns they're not afraid to use, unlike me, who is the proud owner of a red rape whistle. I take a steadying breath and do what I do best, think like a reprobate. 17-year-old me, desperate for a drink, confronted with the challenge of sneaking down a long, dark hallway unseen in order to score a bottle of booze. What would I do? And just like that, it comes to me. I dart sideways, hitting the checkout desk for outdoor equipment. Behind it, I feel around in the dark, making out the locked cabinets holding sporting goods. A touch to my hair, and I have my tactical hair clip in hand. Time to test it out. It takes me a couple of tries. Being in the dark doesn't help. But then, with a click, the lock gives. The broad doors open up. I stick the hair clip back in my hair. Best $4 I've ever spent. Then I resume feeling around in the dark, identifying the texture of a basketball, the shape of a soccer ball, then baseball bats, mitts, balls. I start with a baseball. Standing behind the desk, I wind up, then hurl it for all I'm worth at the glass doors. Nothing shatters, but there is a distinct clang as it ricochets off the metal doorframe, then careens around the space. I wait, poised and alert. When nothing happens, I follow with a basketball, then a soccer ball. More rattles and clangs. Finally, from the end of the hallway,
"Who's there?"
In response, I bounce a basketball down the corridor.
"What the hell?"
I pound another basketball, followed by a second, third, fourth, fifth. Then, before I can think, before the person can think, I grab a bat and give chase, darting down the hall behind half a dozen bouncing balls and relying on them to mask my footsteps. It's Dutch. He's had just enough time to look up, to register my form materializing out of the dark. His hand fumbles belatedly at his side. Then, I nail him in the middle with a baseball bat. As he folds over, I swing at the back of his head. I hold nothing back. He collapses, and there's blood. A lot of blood. Maybe I've killed him. In my adrenaline-fueled state, I have no idea. I pause long enough to fumble around the body. I discover a radio clipped to his waist, as well as a handgun tucked in the back of his jeans. I help myself to both. Then I strip his sweatshirt half off his head and tie it up behind him, restricting his arms, just in case he isn't dead. I check the gun long enough to flip the safety off. I'm no good with firearms. Guns are loud and violent. They take me back to places I don't want to go and memories I don't want to experience. However, this is no time to be squeamish. Next, I check the radio. I turn the volume down, then flick it on. As I slowly turn it up, I hear a voice. Frederick's.
"Dutch, do you copy?"
"Over." I think about it for a second, then start clicking. SOS, over and over again. Let's see what Frederick does with that. I drag Dutch's incredibly heavy body over to an open classroom, leaving just his feet visible. Then I find the darkened doorway directly across from it and melt into the shadows. A full minute passes. I know because I count off the seconds, trying to steady my breathing. A figure appears. From this distance, I can't be sure who. But as it draws closer, I can tell it's not tall enough to be Frederick. Henchman number 2, I decide. I don't recognize the approximate size and shape as someone I've met before, but it hardly matters. Have baseball bat, will travel.
"Dutch,"
the voice whispers. I resume my mental counting. Not yet. Not yet.
"Dutch, what the hell?"
Feet spotted. Henchman number 2 racing toward his fallen comrade. Not yet.
Now,
I spring out the instant the man passes my doorway, a low swing of the bat, directly at the back of the knees, and henchman number two is down. He rolls over surprisingly quick. I have an image of a gun lifting, hear the crack of it firing, singe of heat, stinging pain. I swing the bat again, and the gun goes flying. I smack the man over and over, targeting arms, shoulders, chest. I'm breathing hard, a blur of fear and rage. At the last moment, I halt myself, registering that the evil henchman is no longer moving, but groaning low and bubbly. I've broken his ribs, I'm sure of it. I have an instant of guilt. Then I remember Livia's dumped body, Deke's dying form, and I'm over it. I search around in the dark again, find the fallen gun and toss it across the hall into the second classroom. Another radio is clipped around the man's waist. I take it out. Then I am once more on the hunt. The dark hallway is quiet as I creep down it. I'm shaking head to toe. More bad guys? Dozens of them? I have no way of knowing. I'm trying to think of what I learned from Deke, a counterfeiting operation for student visas, requiring one mastermind, followed by enough men to kidnap two teenage girls and force them into servitude. That shouldn't require too many bodies, I think. I hope. All criminal enterprises have the incentive to run lean. Fewer people for splitting the profits. Again, I think. I hope. Assuming Deke was one of the minions, plus Dutch and Broken Ribs guy, the operation is now down three. Can't be many more to go. I think. I hope. Up ahead, I see a light. I hear a voice. It's not a man's voice, though, but a girl's. Quick! She says urgently, wake up, please, Emmanuel, please. And just like that, I'm staring at Angelique Badeau inside a lit room. Her hair is pulled back tight, the image from her Tamara Levesque license. She wears jeans and sweatshirt, but she is covered in smears of red. Blood. From the van, I think. From the kidnapping of her brother. Which brings me to Emmanuel, whose bound form lies prostrate on the ground. He doesn't seem to be moving. I'm too late. Please, Angelique hisses again. She kneels at her brother's side, shaking him hard. She is trembling, gaze darting around the classroom. I note several computers and what appears to be a pretty impressive printer. The heart of the operations, I think. But I don't have time to consider the matter. Angelique is clearly on high alert, because of the commotion I've made, or because she knows she and her brother still aren't safe. I want to say her name. I want to march in the room and declare, my name is Frankie Elkin, and I hereby rescue you. Except I'm terribly aware that a key individual is missing. Frédéric Lagoudou, the center's executive director and the voice I heard on the radio. So where the hell is he? Angelique darts behind her brother, plucking at the knots on his wrists, and several things happen at once. She looks up, spots me. I hold a finger to my lips, gesturing for her to be silent as I heft up my bat. She shakes her head frantically, and I'm tackled from behind, the baseball bat flying from my grasp. You stupid bitch! I barely get my arms out in time to break my fall. Then Frédéric is upon me, pressing down against my back, pinning me into place. His hand tangles into my hair, jerking my head back. I buck helplessly, but I can't get him off. He's too heavy, and with my arms trapped beneath me, I can't reach the gun at my waist, nor the bat rolling across the floor. He slams my face against the floor. I hear a crack, my nose bursting into a bloody mess, my forehead ringing in stunning pain. Then he yanks up my head again, preparing for the second blow as my eyes water and my mouth fills with blood. He's going to kill me. I am dying. Not a bullet after all. How interesting.
No, no, no!
I hear Angelique's voice, then sense her running approach. Save yourself, I want to yell at her, but I can't manage the words. She barrels into my attacker, the weight lifting from my back as Frederick topples to the side. I roll away, staggering to my feet, trying desperately to get my bearings. The bat, where is it? Or the gun? It must have fallen from my waist because now I can't find it.
I hate you.
Angelique is scrabbling with Frederick. He's bigger, stronger, but she's incensed, smacking at his head and face. An older sister, desperate to save her brother. A girlfriend, mourning her partner's murder. It's not enough. With a twist of his arm, Frederick throws her off.
God damn it!
Angelique! I cry. She barely gets her hands up before Frederick socks her in the face, followed by a quick jab to her kidneys. She doubles over in pain while I continue frantically searching the floor. Bat, gun, bat, gun. My head is ringing, my vision blurred. A fresh sound. Emmanuel, now awake. Emmanuel, still bound hand and foot, desperately trying to inchworm his way to his sister's side.
Angelique!
He screams. Frederick wallops her again and again.
No,
I say helplessly, still staggering about. Frederick materializes before me, and now he's the one with the gun. Sighting me, then Angelique's weeping form, then Emmanuel's bound figure. It's over. I can see it on his face. Simply a matter of whom to shoot first. Me, I hear myself say. Shoot me. The kids are no threat to you.
You bitch. You shouldn't have come back here.
The police are on their way. Run now, while you have the chance. I'll lie. Leave Angelique and Emmanuel alone, and I'll send the police in the opposite direction. I promise.
It doesn't matter.
It does. Deke told us everything. About the website, the fake student visas, Livia's murder. It's over now. Take your profits and get out.
I still have my prize.
Frederick grabs Angelique by the arm, forcing her to stand. She gasps in pain. Her face is bloody, but in her eyes, I see a fierce light of determination. Or maybe it's simply hatred for this man. It doesn't matter. I'll take either, as I finally spy the bat. 2 feet behind her, to the left. Too far for me to reach, but maybe not for her. If I can just distract Frederick, buy Angelique a moment of time. My gaze, darting to the bat, back to her, the bat. Her eyes widen slightly. I think she understands. I remember what Emmanuel said. His sister doesn't dream, she plans. And I think that I'm very sorry I'll never get to meet this amazing young woman, because there's only one way I can think to grab Frederick's attention, and it doesn't end so well for me. Emmanuel, whimpering from the floor. Angelique, tensing in anticipation. Frederick, raising his gun. And me. I'm back in a liquor store, 10 years ago. A young kid, sweating in desperation and shaking with withdrawal, waving a pistol all about.
Gimme your money, all of it, now.
Except I don't have any money. I just spent the last of it on a bottle of vodka, right before I broke and called Paul and begged him, all these months later, to come save me from myself. Now the store clerk is wide-eyed and anxious. Only Paul is calm as he steps forward, raises his arms in a placating motion. Easy now. No need for anyone to get hurt. Did the kid mean to pull the trigger? Or did it just happen? All these years later, I still don't know. I just remember the sound of the gunshot, the look of horror on the kid's face. And the look of surprise on Paul's as he sank down, down, down. The kid fled out the door, and Paul. Now I keep my eyes open. I want to see it coming. I want to watch death finally find me. As I look Frederic right in the eye and charge forward, a split second where I register the shock in his face. He isn't expecting it. He jerks the trigger wildly, releasing Angelique as he braces for contact. She rolls to the side. Please grab the bat, I think. As I register pain, so much fucking pain. I drop, rolling across the floor, keep rolling. Bang, bang, bang. Screaming. Angelique's. My own. Emmanuel's. Followed by a new booming voice. Stop, police! Lower your weapon! Lotham explodes into the classroom, leading with his pistol. Frederic pivots wildly, caught off guard by this fresh threat. Angelique appears behind him, bat raised high.
Lily!
Emmanuel cries.
Police!
Lotham shouts again. Paul is down. Paul is bleeding. No, it's me now. I am down. I am bleeding. Angelique swings the bat. She connects with the side of his head, but not quite hard enough. Frederic turns, gun still in hand. And Lotham takes him out. Bang, bang, bang. Angelique drops the bat.
Emmanuel, please help my brother. Lily, are you okay? Lily!
More pounding footsteps. Cops pouring into the room, flooding down the hall. I should say something. I should move. But I can't seem to get to my feet. I can't seem to find my voice. An unbelievable pressure is building in my chest. Then Lotham is kneeling over me.
Hold on there, Frankie. Just hold on. I got you.
Angelique, I whisper. Emmanuel.
You did it, Frankie. You found her. You rescued both of them. They're safe.
Paul, I say,
he'd be very proud of you.
I start to cry then. Blood and tears, past and present, old wounds and fresh scars.
I got you, Frankie. I got you.
Lotham reassures me, and I believe him. Chapter 37. I'm in the hospital for a matter of days. I don't remember much. A blur of pain as I fight the doctor's orders for morphine, screaming that I'm an addict. Lotham might be there. Or maybe it's Charlie. Viv. Stoney. At one point, I'm convinced even Piper has paid a visit. I don't have insurance, which means once the bullet is removed from my left shoulder and the wound patched on my right arm, I'm back out the door. This time it's Lotham who definitely does the honors of picking me up, driving me back to Stoney's and leading me upstairs. I sleep. I dream of Paul, of Angelique, of Deke dying in my arms, of Livia chasing me through a park. What about me? What about me? When I wake up, I don't have an answer, so I sleep again. In one of my more lucid moments, I learn that Frederic, Dutch, and some guy named Holden have all been arrested. Dutch survived my encounter with him. Holden is still in the hospital, recovering from broken ribs, a broken jaw, and a ruptured spleen. I'm told he'll live. I think I'm grateful, but I can't be sure. Apparently, Frederic had gotten into the drug business nearly 20 years ago. He'd used his position at the rec center to meet and recruit other lower-level dealers before going upmarket with the purchase of hundreds of thousands of dollars in counterfeit currency. He'd initially been amused by Deke's idea to enter the fake license market, but once he'd realized Livia's and Angelique's full potential, he'd quickly gotten on board. Then Angelique's fateful idea to set up a sham college for issuing real student visas. As I'd suspected, the revenue potential was too good to pass up. If he had to kidnap two girls, so be it. He'd stashed the girls at an abandoned townhouse just around the corner from the rec center, with Deke, Holden, and Dutch serving as rotating guards. Livia and Angelique would work at night and sleep during the day, lowering their profile. Most of the time, the girls were confined to the townhouse, utilizing a couple of computers Frederick had brought over for them. But every so often, they'd journey to the rec center after dark to print out new and improved versions of the driver's licenses. Deke assisted with local sales, while Dutch handled online marketing. The license business hadn't been bad, but given the not-quite-grade-A quality of the forgeries, still limited. Merely a convenient cash flow vehicle, while the girls worked toward the larger goal of perfecting a sham college. Unfortunately, Livia had slowly but surely deteriorated under the constant pressure. Angelique's initial kidnapping had stressed her out. By the time Deke grabbed her as well, under Frederick's orders, but also because Deke genuinely thought he could control the situation better if he had the girls together, Livia was a constant bundle of nerves. Angelique had done her best to run interference and buy them time, especially once she'd realized Deke had a soft spot for his sister. Unfortunately, Frederick wasn't the sentimental type. Once Gleason C was perfected and the first round of student visa paperwork issued, he considered the girl to be little more than a liability. He took care of Livia first, but as Angelique and Deke quickly realized, she wouldn't be the last. Frederick, ordering Holden to shoot JJ, kidnap Emmanuel, then kill Deke when he tried to intervene. On and on until there was no one left. Sixth day, or maybe seventh, I managed to get out of bed long enough to shower, force down some soup. Afterward, I stare at my reflection in the mirror. My face drawn, my heavily bandaged shoulder. I look like shit. And I feel like I can't decide. I found Angelique Badeau. I brought home a missing girl. It's not that I expected to feel like a superhero, but I did hope to maybe feel like a better person. Mostly, I feel the same I always did. I go back to bed. When I wake up again, Stoney is standing in my apartment.
You really are a lousy employee.
Yup. Piper appears from beneath the bed, winds around Stoney's ankles, purrs. Traitorous bitch.
But you're not bad at the missing persons thing,
Stoney says. I give him a weak thumbs up.
You got visitors.
Then he's gone, and Gerline is standing in my kitchen, Angelique to one side, Emmanuel to the other. My breath hitches. I feel a stab of pain in my shoulder as I drag myself up to sitting, but I don't wince. I don't want to scare them away. Emmanuel has dark bruises fading on the right side of his face, remnants of his kidnapping. He also has purple smudges beneath his dark eyes, remnants of recent nightmares. In comparison, Angelique appears relatively unscathed, just some scabbing along one cheek. She stands very still, however, a traumatized girl holding on tight, a survivor, alone in a crowded room. I wonder which is worse for her, the painful memories or the unrelenting guilt. I want to tell her I know exactly how she feels, but I doubt she would believe me. She's not there yet in her own healing. She's merely the teenager who went missing, and I'm merely the woman who finally found her. I have no idea how our relationship develops from here. It's never come up before. I offer a tentative smile.
Thank you,
Gerline says. Emmanuel and Angelique deserve the credit. Without Angelique's messages and Emmanuel's determination, we wouldn't be here. I'm sorry you got shot, Angelique states. Totally worth it. Angelique begins. She doesn't seem to know quite what to say, but I think I understand. Can we have a moment? I ask Gerline and Emmanuel. Both hesitate. Having gotten Angelique back, they clearly don't want her out of their sight. But after another second, Gerline concedes with a nod. Emmanuel follows her out. Alone, Angelique appears even more uncomfortable. I finally pat the side of the bed. Sit. It's okay. She complies, but again holds herself rigid. It will get better, I tell her. Not today, not tomorrow, but eventually. It's all my fault. No, it isn't, but I understand it feels that way. I lost someone I love. It's been 10 years. I still blame myself. She regards me solemnly. I loved Livia. When she first came to me about the fake IDs, I told her it was too risky, but she wanted to make me happy, and she'd started meeting her older brother, Deke. I didn't think he was good for her, but he was her brother, and family is family. Angelique shrugs. Given her closeness with her brother, Emmanuel, I could see her not wanting to take such an opportunity away from Livia. But Deke's friends, they kept wanting more, so we would work harder, but nothing seemed enough. Deke tried to tell us it would be okay, just do this, do that, it would all be fine. But I knew. I suspected. By the time Deke said his friend wanted to meet face to face with Livia, we were both nervous. Livia didn't think she could do it. I told her I would go in her place. I thought I could protect her. I even had a plan. I had found online articles about groups that had set up fake universities for issuing student visas. They made millions and millions. Even ICE set up a fake university to trap foreign students looking for visas. I thought such a sophisticated operation would placate Frederick. He would leave us to work on some mysterious website. We could forget about the fake licenses, which were much more difficult to perfect than we thought, and Livia could stop being so stressed out. I assumed I was doing something good. Instead, I made everything worse.
I understand. The lure of so much money had caused Frederick to become even more intense, leading to the eventual abduction of both girls. You can't go backward, I advise Angelique. So consider this. If you can't save the people you already lost, maybe you can save someone else instead. Become a doctor. Build a life. Livia, Deke, they would have wanted that for you. She looks down at her hands. I was with Deke when he died. He tried for you and Livia. He loved his sister and genuinely regretted what happened to you. In the end, this was more his fault than either of yours. Deke tried to help, she says, still looking down at her lap. I'm assuming she means her and Livia's relationship. The night when Frederick strangled Livia, he would have killed me next, but Deke stopped him. I was still useful, he argued. The student visas had been my idea, yes? He also convinced Frederick to drive Livia's body to Franklin Park. He said it would distract the police and be safer than having the cops discover her body near the rec center. But really, Deke couldn't bear the thought of Livia being dumped in some alley. I couldn't either.
I'm sorry. Holden shot him in the van. Emmanuel saw. Deke, he wasn't a good man. He made many mistakes, especially with his sister. But I'm sorry he's dead.
I'm not sure what to say. I'm getting tired, the ache in my shoulder deeper. Finally, you're a survivor, Angelique. You're strong, resilient. Don't forget that. If you hadn't risked posting the essay, dropping the fake license, appearing in public, we wouldn't have found you. We wouldn't have been able to save you or your brother. It's not gratitude I see reflected in her eyes, however, but guilt. She wasn't trying to save herself. She'd been trying to save Livia, and her girlfriend's death was now her burden to bear. It will get better, I repeat, though I can already tell she doesn't believe me. She's not ready to forgive herself yet. Maybe she never will. I understand that, too.
Angelique stands up, gives me a final solemn nod, then departs. I manage some water, more of what I'm assuming is Viv's homemade soup. I brush my teeth, comb my hair, refresh my bandage. The bullet graze on my right arm is already significantly healed, which leaves only the recently stitched hole in my shoulder. That will definitely leave a scar. I can picture myself fingering it at night, reminding myself that once I was successful. Once I got it right. Do I feel like a different person yet? I keep waiting, but no such luck. I remain Frankie Elkin, alcoholic, ex-lover, lost soul. I retreat to the mattress, taking with me my brown leather messenger bag. I pull out two manila files, pour through the contents till my eyes grow weary. When I wake up again, my room is dark and a shadow looms beside my bed. "Shh," Lotham says as he climbs onto the mattress beside me. "Just rest." Then he gathers me up against him and I feel the heat of his body. I drift off to the steady rhythm of his breathing. Later, when I wake up crying, he wipes away my tears with his fingers and then with his lips, and I turn myself fully against him. I move urgently and demandingly until he finally gives up and gives in. Then we are skin to skin, gentle but rough, soft but demanding, and it is better than any drop of booze. Afterward, I finally sleep deep and hard, and when I wake up to find him gone, that's okay too. It makes it easier for what I have to do next. I pick up my phone and dial. First time I've ever called in daylight. I'm not even sure she'll pick up. Then, "Frankie, please. I found a missing girl. Her name is Angelique Badeau. She's 16. I brought her home alive." A pause. That's good. Paul would like that. But you don't need me to tell you that, Frankie. And all these years later, please, can you just stop calling? It hurts. He died saying he loved you. He said, so many he tried to fix, but you healed him. You were the great love of his life. A much longer pause now. Maybe she's crying. I know I am. I've never told her this before. I should have. But I just couldn't. I needed, selfishly, for Paul to be about me. I needed, terribly, to keep his last moments as mine. "Thank you," Amy says at last. I can hear her drawing a shuddery breath. "I'll stop calling. I'm sorry. I don't know why." But I do. And she does too. Because she is all I have left of him. Just like I am her sole connection to his memory. "Well, maybe every now and then," she allows. "Are you happy?" I ask her, genuinely curious. "I have a new husband, a baby girl. Life moves on, Frankie. But thank you for calling. Thank you for telling me that. Goodbye, Amy. Goodbye, Frankie." I set down the phone. I take a deep breath, and then I'm ready. Not new and improved, but maybe the old model is better than I thought. Final shower, fresh change of clothes, then I find Stoney downstairs in his office. He doesn't have to ask to know.
"That's it then? Back on the road?"
I nod.
"You can keep the apartment till the end of the month. Longer if you want to return to work."
I nod.
"Bet there's more cases around here. Maybe people will even come to you as word gets out."
He studies me. I love the lines of his face. A man who's known heartache, but also hope. "Thank you," I tell him. "And for both of us, it's enough." I return upstairs and pack. 5 shirts, 3 pairs of pants, same threadbare underwear I still haven't gotten around to replacing. I pause long enough to write a note. Lotham will be angry, but he won't be surprised. He is who he is, and I am who I am. My name is Frankie Elkin, and finding missing people is what I do. When the police have given up, when the public no longer remembers, when the media has never bothered to care, I start looking. Now, I take my suitcase, head downstairs, and then I disappear. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Before She Disappeared by Lisa Gardner, performed by Hilary Huber. Performance copyright 2020 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.